Hey there, if you are ready to build your service-based business from scratch and ditch your 9-to-5, then I want you to head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap and download my free Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit. Again, you can head to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap to download my Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit to get started on building your service-based business and ditching your 9-to-5. Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Boleyn, your host, and it is time to do it your way. Hello, my friends. You guys are in for a real treat today. Today's guest, Blythe Harris, is the creative force behind Stella in Dot. She is also the recipient of FGI's Rising Star Award for Accessories, the Accessories Council Award for Retail Innovation, and the Draper's Accessory Designer of the Year Award in UK. Blythe Harris has built a world-class team of designers and merchants in both New York and Sausalito-based design studios. Originally inspired by her grandmother's Dots vintage jewelry box, Blythe's creative vision mixes the beauty of vintage design and craftsmanship with the modern aesthetic and versatility of today's stylish woman. Blythe's leadership has helped grow Stella and Dot into a global brand. You guys are going to absolutely love this interview with Blythe. We talk about in this podcast about Blythe's background, discover the inspiration behind the company, and find out about her actual first business, and hear about her experience overseas working with a nonprofit, and learn about working with a business partner, and also get to know her mindset and process of what it was like when she was starting out. Let's go to the show. Today's podcast is brought to you by Gusto. Gusto offers modern, easy payroll benefits and HR to small businesses across the country. They were even named Best Online Payroll by PC Mag. Gusto makes it simple and easy to do your payroll. It automatically files and pays your taxes. It's super easy to use, and you can add benefits and HR support to help take care of your team and keep your business safe. It's loyal, it's modern, you might fall in love with yourself. Listeners get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. You can try a demo and test it out at gusto.com/she. That's gusto, gusto.com/she. Today's podcast episode is sponsored by FreshBooks, which you guys know how much I love these guys. FreshBooks is an invoicing and accounting software designed specifically for small business owners. It's simple, intuitive, and keeps you way more organized than a dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. You can create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds and then get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. Getting paid on time as a small business owner is extremely important. And you've got enough to remember without worrying about overdue client invoices. FreshBooks has automatic late payment email reminders so you can spend more time building your business. Join the 24 million people who've used FreshBooks. Try it for free for 30 days, no catch and no credit card required. Head to www.freshbooks.com/she and enter in She Did It Her Way in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. Again, that's freshbooks.com/she and enter in She Did It Her Way in How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. I'm so excited to have Blythe Harris, who is the Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of Stella and Dot. How amazing. I'm so excited, freaking out over here. Blythe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amanda. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, why don't you, I mean, I imagine majority of the listeners know what Stella Dot is, but I would love for you to tell us, you know, what it is that you do. And then let's talk about your journey and how you got to where you are today and how you co-founded this insanely amazing company.
Totally. So Stella Dot is, we're a lifestyle accessories and apparel brand, and we're sold through what we call social selling, which means that people sell both in person through trunk shows and online with our digital tools to their social networks. So basically to their friends and family and extended networks. Mm-hmm. And I have what I think is one of the best jobs in the world. I wake up every morning so excited because as Chief Creative Officer, I oversee just the creative vision of the company. So all of the designs of the products and some of the marketing. And I collaborate with our amazing team to just bring great product to this channel.
Yeah. I mean, how, like, what an amazing opportunity to be in a creative space when you wake up and to love your job. Would you take us back, give us a high level overview of your journey throughout the different careers and education and everything that you got, and then talk to us about how did you land at Stella.dot? How did you birth this incredible company?
I sure will. Well, I studied art in college and I literally graduated and had no idea what I wanted to do, or even sort of what creative jobs were open to me as somebody who was a creative. So I ended up falling into, I was a personal assistant to somebody running a creative agency. That was my first job out of college. And we ended up founding and starting a little toy company, which was totally random. We ended up baking these little toy pieces in my partner's oven and just having this idea for this really organic children's building toy. So we worked on that for a few years, and it's called Zoob. It's actually still sold today. But that whole experience was just an incredible learning experience because first of all, I realized I was definitely a natural, like, born entrepreneur. I wanted to create things and put new products into the world. But I also learned what I didn't know, which was we started this with a group of artists, and none of us really had any business skills. So we didn't manage our cash flow. And we, even though we had a really successful first product, we launched at Toy Fair and we had about $8 million in revenue. We actually had an offer to buy the company, which we turned down. And we didn't manage our cash flow and we lost control of the company to investors. So I decided at that point that as a creative person, I really wanted to get business skills so that that never happened again. And I ended up going back to business school. I took a year off after the toy company, and I learned
how many years were you doing the toy company for, you said?
Well, this was, I was doing it for about 3 years.
Wow.
And then I took a break. I actually moved to Mexico. I learned metal smithing and I did some sculpture. And I decided I really wanted to create accessories. I'd always loved to travel. And one of my favorite things about traveling was just going to all these different parts of the world and just seeing how, like, beautifully adorned the women were. And I had really wanted to go to India and had been really studying up on India. And I decided I really wanted to make accessories and I wanted to make things for people just to bring a little more happiness and joy into their everyday lives and make them just look a little bit more special and just feel like they were kind of wearing a wow. So I moved to Mexico. I learned how to make jewelry. And when I was doing that, I was surrounded by all these really talented metalsmiths who had been trying to sort of start their own jewelry lines. But I realized how hard it was for an individual artist or designer to get distribution. So I decided I really wanted to do something on a larger scale in jewelry and accessories. I felt like there was a white space in the market. You know, there was kind of Claire's at the low end and then Tiffany's at the high end, but there were really no mid-level sort of nationally or internationally known brands in that mid-level space. So I decided to go to business school. And I spent 2 years at business school. And after business school, I went to work for LVMH in London and Paris in their watches and jewelry division, which was an incredible experience because they're, you know, world's largest luxury goods company. And I learned a ton through that experience. Mm-hmm. Am I boring you yet or should I keep going?
No. I love it because you can just, like, I'm over here imagining you, like, down in Mexico doing your thing and you're, like, going to Colombia and then the LVMH. No, this is perfect. I love it. It sets the stage.
Okay, great. Yeah, it was kind of an unconventional path to business school. I'll tell you that much. I got there and just was a little bit of a fish out of water, but learned a ton. And it did land me at LVMH. So I learned an incredible amount at LVMH. I really learned how much precision and attention to detail goes into making a luxury product and then bringing that to life in the marketing. And I had the amazing experience to work directly with Mr. Arnault. And I just learned so much about having a super high bar for everything that I did. And then after LVMH, I actually went to work for a nonprofit in India. And I lived with a tribe and helped them. It was in Orissa, which is a tribal region of India. And I helped this tribe who did sort of a traditional form of lost wax casting and made metal beads. And I helped them adapt their designs to a Western market and helped them get distribution into a retailer in the UK. And then after that, I moved home. I decided I wanted to get some experience working for a mid-level retailer in the US before trying to launch my own thing. And I went to work for Banana Republic, who had just launched jewelry. And I worked there for about 2 years and helped grow the jewelry business to $50 million. There was an incredible appetite for this sort of mid-level costume jewelry. So at that point, I actually went to my 10-year college reunion and met Jessica, who is now my business partner and the CEO of Stella & Dot. And she had gone to Stanford Business School and had studied the direct selling industry. And she really uncovered an incredible white space in the direct selling industry, which was at that time very behind in terms of the product, the level of the product, the level of the branding, but also in terms of really leveraging technology and the internet. So she had founded Wedding Channel and she had an amazing technology background. And she had a vision to really bring this very large direct selling industry, billions and billions of dollars, online and sort of into the modern age with the modern business opportunity and modern selling tools. And I was listening to what she was doing, and I realized I was at a time in my life where I was watching my friends make what seemed like a very binary decision, which either to have kids and quit their jobs or to have kids and, you know, get a nanny and never see their kids and keep working. Mm-hmm. And so I started to really feel the type of choice that women had when they had kids and also a career. So when Jessica started telling me about her vision and her idea, it really struck a chord in two ways. One was I felt very passionately about giving women a flexible business opportunity, the opportunity to start their own fashion business, but to do it part-time on their own terms, to work when they wanted and how they wanted, and to make a serious income. So I was very passionate about that. And then also having worked in accessories, both at LVMH and at Banana Republic, I realized there was a big barrier for people buying accessories and that everything was behind the case. So it was very hard to touch and feel things, and that it would really benefit from more of a social selling atmosphere where you could really touch and feel the product. So with that, our partnership was formed. We renamed the company that she had been working on to be Stella & Dot after our grandmas, my grandmother's Dot, her grandmother's Stella. And we relaunched into mid-level costume and fashion jewelry. And then, yeah, that was 11 years ago.
So. Oh my gosh. I love it. I have some follow-up questions too, to poke around in the journey piece of it. So one of the first questions is, you mentioned at the beginning that you always knew that you would be an entrepreneur, and you started the award-winning company, the Zoob, the toy company, and then you went back into corporate. Where was your mindset at in terms of becoming a business owner again versus staying in corporate, and how did you manage that? And to give a little bit more preference, the reason why I'm asking is because I imagine maybe there's some listeners out there that are feeling maybe like it's too late to get into the entrepreneurship game or to start building their business, and maybe they're in corporate and not sure when's the right time. Do I leave corporate and start this business? And so I would love to know where your head was at during the time when you were at LVMH and Banana Republic, and what was going on?
That's a great question. I mean, I think I always knew inside that I would go help start another company. So I loved every minute of corporate because I felt like it was the most incredible training ground, way better than business school, frankly. In terms of just understanding, you know, how to set up a process, how to set up, accountability, communication. It was really incredible. And when I met Jessica, I will have to say, even though I always knew I'd go do something entrepreneurial again, I was so happy in my job. It was so comfortable. I was really enjoying the perks of being part of a large company. And I really, really was happy. So it did take me about a year to
Can you dive into that transition of a year and just talk about the emotions and thoughts and like how you came to the conclusion, like, this is the right time?
Yeah. So I think the first thing was, when you're really happy in a job, obviously the risk is much higher. So I needed to really take time to develop two things. One was absolute in, you know, the person I was going to partner with. So I did a lot of, I talked to a lot of former people that she had worked with, including her ex-business partner from Wedding Channel. And I developed an absolute trust that she was a very direct communicator and super, super smart and just such a talent. So I do think it's important to, if you're going to have a partner, really make a bet on the person and feel utterly confident about the person you are going to partner with. So I developed that comfort level, which was one big step. And then the second step was I needed to think sort of really dig deep into what I wanted to do with my life. Like, why was I put on this earth? What my talents were? How did I want to leave the world a better place? And what I realized is, even though I loved my job, it was missing a bit of like a mission or a mission impact. And when I really learned more about Jessica's vision and direct selling in general, and the mission of giving women flexibility and giving women financial independence, that was enough for me, because I realized that I could connect what I was passionate about with a mission that I really believed in. So I would say, you know, once you hook into the mission of why you're going to be an entrepreneur and believing in something that, you know, is just beyond your business niche that you're going into, I think that makes it a lot easier to make that leap.
Mm-hmm. And then when you were doing your traveling, like when you were in India and you were in Mexico and you were also learning all these skills in traveling, did you ever in the beginning stages, like after college, feel as if you're going against the grain? Did you meet any resistance? Did people think you were crazy? And, or was it just, it was not that, I guess?
Oh no, so many people.
They're like, Blythe, what are you doing?
Yeah, and you know, everything from my parents to my peers, and a lot of my I graduated from Stanford in 1995, and a lot of my peers did go to work for Google, which would have been a good option.
But that wouldn't have been terrible at that time.
It wasn't for me, but yeah, it was a very unconventional path, but I would actually say, in a weird way, I almost encountered just as much or more resistance when I went to business school.
Oh,
people telling me, "Whoa, you're a creative. I thought you were going to do something. Why are you going to business school? Like, this doesn't make sense." And people couldn't fit me or my path into a box that made sense for them. And that I did get a lot of sort of judgment on both sides of that. But in the end, that ended up being my superpower, because it's the creativity plus the understanding of the business skills and, you know, how to read a balance sheet, how to create a spreadsheet, that actually has been my superpower. So it was that going against the grain that actually fed everything.
Yeah. And I think that brings up, that highlights a really great point that regardless of where you are at in your life, there's always going to be outside opinions trying to tell you and give you thoughts about what they think. And what you're saying before about this box that you didn't fit into. And it's just a reminder that we know ourselves the best out of anyone else in this world. And we have to do what we believe is the right step and the right thing for us at any given moment.
Yeah, it's exactly. And I also think anytime you feel like you're in uncharted territory, that's where the innovation and creativity is happening. And that's where, you know, that's kind of the heart of entrepreneurship. And I remember feeling like almost an imposter at different stages of my life. Cause I was like, am I supposed to be doing this? Or do I have the right to be doing this? Like, I haven't gotten this degree, or I got that degree and I should have gotten the other degree, you know? Mm-hmm. I realized looking back that it was when I felt like that the most innovation was happening. And that's actually when I started really getting credibility and we started, you know, having real traction.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. It's almost when you're feeling imposter syndrome, it's like a good sign because you just have to keep going. Oh, I love it. Okay. So now we've got the stage, everything set, 11 years. I would love if you could take us back to the early stages, maybe even the first year, second year of what it was like at Stella and Dot, and maybe give us a high level of like the 11 years. So in first 1 to 3 years, this is how I would categorize the first 3 years. And then the next 5 years or whatever that might look like, take us through the different stages.
Oh, yep. So 1 to 3 years was total startup mode. Everything from, you know, Jessica and I picking and packing, you know, shipping out boxes for our first Christmas to, you know, I actually moved to New York with my husband, because he had to move there for his job. And I started the whole product organization for Stella & Dot out of a closet / conference room within his company. And we had no supplies, like no resources. It was just me. And, I hired one production person and we were just sitting in a room and we were literally like finding bits and pieces of things, everything from like my grandmother's old jewelry box to, you know, other things we were cutting apart for supplies. And I was hand sketching drawings with a pencil and like stapling materials to them and sending it off to the vendor. And I had no idea that that's like, wasn't how you're supposed to do it, that everything was supposed to be on the computer and, you know, perfectly done. And that's, so it was just totally like taking the whatever resources we had and making it work. And in a way, there was an incredible innovation and creativity to that, and also a simplicity because we didn't have a big team. There were no layers of decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just everything was really fluid. I will say the biggest thing I learned during that stage with respect to building the product organization is when you're growing that fast, I mean, we went from like 3 million to 30 million to 100 million in 2 years.
Wow.
So when you're growing that fast, I just remember, I mean, one, like just kind of hanging on by my thread, like working all the time. But I remember when we finally did start to hire and we had the resources to start hiring people, which was really in year three, I remember making a critical mindset shift, which is I cannot just hire the person for the job that I need now. I actually need to think about replacing myself, because when you're growing that fast, like you literally need to replace yourself because you need to be elevating at such an intense rate. And you need to be hiring so ahead of the curve that it was just, I remember just having the aha moment that I literally needed to think about hiring totally differently. It was an incredible time. And I do remember at one point, my husband, who had been charging us no rent, his company realized we were actually had higher revenues than they did. And we were still working out the closet. So they had to start charging us rent and then we got our own space. So
like,
then I would say,
honey, that rent.
So then the second segment of time, was also amazing. We moved into our own space for the product team. We moved into a bigger space for our headquarters. We were starting to really assemble so much momentum with the number of women signing up for this opportunity and really starting to earn real money that was making a huge impact in their family. So that middle phase is when we started to hear stories about, you know, women making six figures, you know, and just funding incredible things for their family, whether it was, you know, paying their mortgage while their husband was, you know, in Afghanistan, or paying for fertility treatments, or, you know, paying for special schooling for kids with disabilities. Like, just these incredible stories started to emerge from our field of sellers that really fueled like this mission impact and this sort of the heart of the company. And we started to have thousands of people at our conferences, and Jessica and I would like peer out from behind the stage and just be like, wow, this is starting to feel like a movement. Mm-hmm. And that was incredibly rewarding. And then we really started to establish, you know, an internal team and culture. And then this third phase, I would say, is all about sort of managing complexity and figuring out what the next Stellanot 2.0 is. So in the past 4 years, we've actually launched two other brands. One was another accessories brand, which was almost actually, I had this idea with somebody else on my team for a new accessories concept. And we were debating whether to put it inside Stellanot or to launch a new company, because we were also working on another beauty brand, Ever Skincare, which has also launched. And so we launched these two other companies, and we expanded internationally. So we added a lot of complexity to the business, at sometimes too much complexity, and we've had to rein in a bit of the complexity and sort of simplify and go through a next level of innovation. So we're actually just finishing up our 3-year strategic plan for Stellanot 2.0. We've launched apparel in the last 18 months, which is our biggest growth category at Stellanot. So that's been huge pivot to add apparel. And we, you know, our Ever Skincare is growing by, you know, just crazy amount. And so we are just trying to make really smart decisions on where to focus our resources and our attention, given that the business has gotten more complex.
Mm-hmm. So how have you as an individual personally grown through just all the experience in the past 11 years, taking Stella and Dot from where it was and building it to now having all these different companies?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an incredible learning curve, which is actually exactly coincided with me becoming a parent too. Mm. Because I had my first child like 9 months after partnering with Jessica. So literally on the same track. And
having two kids at once.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I had a second kid. And so I would say one of those themes that ties both of those together is around managing people and managing a team. And there are common themes between, frankly, learning how to be a parent and managing people, you know, everything from how to set really clear expectations and boundaries, but, you know, give people freedom within boundaries, putting other people obviously ahead of yourself, and really just focusing on empowerment and mentorship rather than individual contribution. And so I'd say that was one big theme. I also think I've been on just a journey. Like as a creative person, I am more on the sensitive side. I tend to have zero filter for what's coming at me, you know, which is part of what makes me creative. I just absorb everything. So I'd say I've really learned how to, you know, just stay calm and centered, whether it's through mini meditations throughout the day and exercise and just really gaining perspective. So I have done a lot of work on developing tools that enable me to remain calm amidst all this chaos. And then I'd say the third piece is in our business, you know, managing a field of over 30,000 women, we have a lot of public speaking and a lot of events where we have to speak. And that was something where I was really not prepared to do. I was more on the shy, introverted side, but really learning how to communicate to large groups of people and communicate in general, like just with our exec team. So I'd say it's been an incredible, incredible journey of personal development over the past 11 years.
Yeah. And you mentioned communication, which feeds into one of the questions that I did want to ask is, you know, having a partner and a co-founder in a business, how have you both been able to communicate and like manage emotions? And what does that look like? And what do you like, how do you handle difficult conversations with one another?
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful thing having that long of a partnership. And it's kind of like a second marriage in a way. I mean, it requires really direct communication. It requires dedication to the relationship, and it requires some tough conversations and also some maintenance work. So I would say I'm lucky in that my partner, Jessica, is very direct communicator. So you're never left wondering, you know, what is happening behind the scenes. She's not passive aggressive or, you know, at all. She's just very direct. And so for me, it's been actually learning how to not take things personally and to welcome and appreciate that any direct feedback or communication is actually an investment in the partnership. And then I've learned how to be way more direct and have tough conversations that I probably would have shied away from before. So I would say we're a really good balance for each other too, and that's helped. So we have different strengths, and but we have a shared sort of creativity and entrepreneurial spirit, which has really been great for creating a business together.
Yeah, and you, like you said, you guys have, I mean, Stella and Dot, it's a piece of each of your families to come together and like for your grandma to be part of the brand. I love it. What is something that like, well, actually I would love for you to share, just take us back to one monumental big decision that you made. You make, I'm sure, plenty of big decisions, but maybe a time when it didn't go the way that you anticipated that it would go. And then how did you work through that disappointment or that failure?
Yeah, that's a good question. Trying to think of it when it didn't go the way we'd wanted to. I mean, we've had some product launches that, you know, most of our product launches have been really successful, but we launched watches, and what we realized is that, you know, most people wanted to wear, you know, more of a luxury brand as their watch, more of a status oriented purchase as their watch. So we ended up discontinuing watches. So that was one example of just, you know, we tried something product wise and then we ended up discontinuing it. I'd say we learn so much every day from launching things. I would say probably the biggest decision we've faced in the last 11 years though was to whether to do Keep as a separate brand or do the Keep accessories concept within Stell & Dot. Mm-hmm. And ultimately we decided to make it a separate brand because our mission as a company is to create as many independent business owners and entrepreneurs as possible. And we wanted to target a different demographic and a different pocket of people with Keep. And I would say that was, looking back, was definitely the right decision, but it hasn't been without complexity because obviously we also want to give as much innovation as possible to our incumbent brand, Stell & Dot. So, you know, there was a bit of friction about giving a new accessories concept to a whole new group of people. And we needed to add something really big and exciting to Stell & Dot to make sure that our Stell & Dot leaders also felt like we were adding a lot of innovation to the Stell & Dot brand. And that was one of the reasons why we launched the massive category of apparel within Stell & Dot, which has gone really, really well.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Just even the mindset and the thought process behind like categories and thinking about marketing and products and things like that is super helpful. I would love to, as we're starting to wind down, kind of end with more about Blythe Harris as an entrepreneur and talk about maybe like what is your daily routine look like? What are some of your non-negotiables? And dive in a little bit to that. So I'd love for you to share, like, let's kick it off and talk about what are some of your non-negotiables? And I know you mentioned meditation and working out prior, but anything else that you can add to that about how you say yes to things and how do you determine what you say no to things?
Yep. So I usually wake up at 6 a.m. and the first non-negotiable thing is I write in 3 pages in my journal, which is part of there's a book, The Artist's Way, that really encourages people to write in journals every morning. And it helps clear your mind of all the chatter to just create a pathways for creativity. So that's my first non-negotiable. My second is I make breakfast for my kids every morning and I take them to school 3 to 4 days a week. My husband covers the other 2 days or 1 to 2 days. And then I get to work. I have a lot of meetings during the day, but I always try to carve out at least a half an hour every day of just total white space, whether I use it for meditation or just sitting and looking at something beautiful, you know, that's not on my agenda for the day per se, but maybe it's like a book of an exotic place I want to travel to, or just getting online, looking at, you know, something unexpected, because I think a key to creativity is putting unexpected things in front of your eyes, because that's how you make those interesting connections. You can't just have the same routine every day. You need to get new things in front of your eyes. I'd say exercise twice a week is non-negotiable for me. I go trail running twice a week with a group of women who are other working moms, and that's an incredible time for me to both communicate with them and chat with them, but also get some exercise. And I try to be home for dinner most nights. So I really carve out that time with my kids, and then I'll get back online after they go to bed. But I really try to have that stable, predictable family time every day.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that is amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Now, to round out and to end every interview, I always do a rapid fire round. So these are meant to be answered quick and fast, whatever comes to mind. So are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. What is your favorite book?
I would say My Brilliant Friend by Elena Ferrante.
Okay. What is that one about?
It takes place in Naples. It's about a friendship, actually, primarily a very complex, beautiful, longstanding friendship between two girls. And it's beautifully written. Nobody knows who the author really is. It's sort of a pen name of Elena Ferrante, and there's all this speculation around it, but it's really just a beautiful story about a friendship.
Love it. What is something that you believe that others may think is insane?
I don't believe in routines.
Oh, I really like that.
Okay. It's kind of insane. It's like reinventing the wheel every single day. There's no easy. I go to work slightly different way every day. I try to eat something different every day. I really don't believe in routines.
Okay. And then the last one is, what is the best $100 or less purchase one can make in their business?
Oh, this one is easy for me. I would say invest in a pin board so that you can have your own personal mood board or vision board, which is a physical representation of where you want to take your business and your own personal development.
Mm-hmm. And such perfect. Yeah, no, absolutely. I was going to say such perfect timing because it's coming to the end of the year, but this won't air until end of January, but you can still do it at the end of January. So if you haven't done it yet, definitely do that. So, well, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. Can you share with my listeners where they can learn more about your business and Stella and Dot?
Definitely. Thanks, Amanda. And we're at www.stella.com and keepcollective.com is our other accessories brand. And our skincare brand is Ever skincare.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Amanda.
And there you have it. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you are interested in trying out their skincare line, Everskin, you can head on over to everskin.com and use promo code SHEDIDIT, capital SHEDIDIT, for 15% off your order.
Gusto offers modern, easy payroll benefits and HR to small businesses across the country. They were even named Best Online Payroll by PC Mag. Get 3 months free when you run your first payroll at gusto.com/she. And don't wait, because now is the best time to get yourself set up for 2019. That's gusto.com/she. Get paid twice as fast with automated online payments through FreshBooks. You can give FreshBooks a 30-day free trial, no strings, no catch, no credit card required. Head to freshbooks.com/she and enter in She Did It Her Way in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidherway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.